Yeah, there it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELB.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're enjoying a nice spring snow, like I have. Maybe you're trying to walk the dog. Maybe you're got a big coat on because it's springtime and you live in Colorado. Or wherever you happen to live. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring that show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to keep making these. And in exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a boatload of bonus content that's just coming at them all the time. They've got spoiler chats. They've got Feeling This, an entire show where Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talk about the feelings behind video games. Two seasons waiting for them. They've also got the Wednesday paid DLC program. Every single Wednesday, Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself talking about the stuff that patrons want to talk about. It's a wild, wacky, fun time. Midweek pick-me-up. And it's exclusive to patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's always got a spring in his step, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I actually got disqualified for that. They found it.
They found the spring in your step?
They found the spring, and they're like, you can't use that, sir. That is not allowed.
The annual bounding competition where you're bounding down the lane?
Yeah, I was actually just like down the wedding aisle. You know, I was bounding down, and they
threw you
me
out of the wedding.
Yeah, they did.
Your own?
No, but it was a whole usher routine. It was all on Instagram. I'm surprised you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm wearing shorts.
You were doing one of Usher's routines?
I was the usher. No, I was an usher. Oh. Sorry, did that come out wrong?
I thought maybe
Usher's
you were
wedding. Yeah, no. I was, yeah. Stay with me, Jeff. Come on. You gotta.
This story has a spring in its step. Hey, we got an awesome show for you, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot to talk about. There's an entire Nintendo Indie World showcase this week. Some interesting Sony news. We've got really cool games to talk about. Some interesting releases. And ladies and gentlemen, we have one of our favorite guests to do all that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because once again, DLC stands for decreasing the largest constant. Because we have the founder of MinMax, our friend Ben Hansen, is back with us. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hello, I am doing great. Christian, isn't it comforting to hear him do that intro again and again and again and again? Isn't that sweet? Like, how many times have you heard him do that intro at this point?
Not once. I don't listen. I'm sorry.
I get it.
Intro,
yeah.
What?
But hey, thank you for having me back. It's an honor. It's been too long here.
It has indeed. Huge fan of your content over there at MinMax. You guys are crushing it. Your video empire that you've built. It's amazing to see. I love it. You're right. It has been too long. We've been trying to make this happen for a while. I also have to thank you. I was going to do this before the show, but might as well do it on the show. I really want to thank you because you've sent some other folks our way, some great guests that we've had in recent months, because you, suggested them. So I'm just super grateful for that. Thank you.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. You had Haley McLean, the community manager for MinMax. She was on not too long ago. She's amazing. And I saw, you know, last week you had Marcus Stewart from Game Informer, and maybe you'll have more Game Informer folks in the future, but it's so fun. Like, it's fun to be in the industry long enough to see like these tendrils of like, especially from Game Informer out in Minnesota here. It's like, oh, you're connected to so many people. It's a cozy little industry out here.
I love it. Love it. All right. Well, let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story.
story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way. We also have a Discord. It's 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of really fun folks hanging out, talking games and all sorts of other stuff. I urge you to take part. But Ben, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Let's go for that Nintendo Indie World Showcase. Let's break this thing down, man.
I love that Nintendo has embraced indies in such a strong way in the Switch era. You know, there was a time when the Nintendo consoles weren't really friendly to indies in such a strong way. But that has changed this generation. It's not news, but I continue to be pleased to see it.
Yeah. But what about that name change? Indie World?
Is it different?
Come on.
You want it to be
Nindies. Yeah. I like the portmanteau.
Yeah. You know, we had Nindies, you know,
I'm a fan of the portmanteau and Nindies is better. Nintendo Indie World Showcase. Yeah. You're right, Christian. Thank you for bringing that up.
But look, that's the story that we wanted to talk about.
I forgot to be outraged.
There's still plenty of puns in them playing with the words. I mean, they cannot get away. I mean, how many cat puns were in their presentation for Little Kitty Big City? They just, you know, Treehouse masters of localization over there, but they will just ram these lazy puns down your throat throughout this entire presentation.
You're not wrong. I found this particular Indie World Showcase this week to be... It kind of had a theme, I think. It was sort of variations on a theme. And that theme may have been cozy. A lot of cozy games, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're totally right. Like that theme. And then also there's a couple things kind of bleeding out from Apple Arcade. They're launching and making a big deal of it. Hey, it's coming to Switch. And if you never played Apple Arcade, there's a lot of great stuff coming. But if you are a big fan of Apple Arcade, it's like, what? This came out years ago, didn't it?
Right. Yeah, my kid's been playing TMNT, Splintered Fate, for a long time. It's finally coming to Switch. But I would love, Ben, for you to give me your take on this particular showcase, maybe a couple of your favorite titles that were shown off during the Indie World Showcase this week.
Yeah, Yars Rising might be the most interesting one in that batch. This is from WayForward, who they're releasing games, it feels like, every 4 months, WayForward, and they have been for, 25 years. It's just quietly an incredible studio. But this is the big reimagining that you have been dreaming about, Jeff Cannata, of Yars game from Atari here.
Well, I'm going to pull the age card and say I do harbor a deep love of Yars Revenge. It probably, I'd venture to say, my second favorite Atari 2600 game from when I was a kid. The first being Pitfall 2. Pitfall 2 is a great game, way ahead of its time. I loved Yars Revenge. I absolutely loved that game. It's so weird and insane and difficult. And I don't know, something about it, I absolutely love that game. Yars Rising bears no resemblance to it.
That's the thing. Yeah, is there any vibe there that you're picking up on? I don't know.
I mean, it's cool, I guess, that we're resurrecting this IP, and the main character of Yars Rising has a little, tattoo of the main character from Yars Revenge on it. But that's pretty much where the similarities end, I guess. I mean, what did you think of it looks like a 2D platformer with some hacking mechanics.
Yeah, looked a little rough, a little framey. I don't know. Hopefully they can clean that up a little bit. But yeah, it's like, oh, you're looking at it, it's like, okay, is this going to be a Metroidvania? It opens with the main character shooting a Kamehameha wave, basically, which got my attention, obviously. but yeah, I'm very curious to see where it goes. It's just so fun to see how much does the Yars IP, how much weight can that lift? You know, we mentioned during our reaction stream at MinMax, because Kelsey Lewin was on, and she's always diving into game history at MinMax, so she was big on Howard Scott Warshaw's Yars series, and she dove into it a little bit, and people were arguing in the comments about no, this is actually a new game for WayForward. It's not an old thing. Yars is a new franchise. No. Yars is an old thing. It's just something that people don't talk about very often. So I want to see, is anybody going to jump into this world because of that? I mean, I guess it piqued your interest a little bit more, Kanata.
It certainly did. Seeing Yars, but again, I'm old. I think the answer to your question about how much the Yars IP can lift these days is answered in sort of what we saw of the footage, which is
you're right.
They didn't make a big AAA game out of this IP, right? It does look rough. I would agree with what you said.
I hope it was Atari coming to way forward with money. You know, I hope it wasn't necessarily like, hey, this thing is going to be the next, you know, revitalized IP of old, but more,
yeah.
Hey, will you give us money to play with your IP, or what IP is available? Like, I don't know who was paying who or what kind of that transaction looked like, but I'm hoping that, I mean, it's hard to talk about Atari. I don't even know what they are. At one point they were, you know, a hat with speakers in it. And so yeah. If they're doing interesting things with their IP, I think that's a win for everybody. And way forward, as you mentioned, Ben, they make hits. So
yeah, Atari is in such an interesting spot because Lunar Lander Beyond is coming out very soon. I think it's coming out this week even. And that's the developer of Chris Tales, which was that JRPG style game that came out a couple years ago, which was surprisingly good. And so Atari is picking talented developers to revitalize these games. It feels like none of them are getting a huge budget. I don't know if they're turning any heads, but it's cool if you're zooming in and looking at Atari to see what they're doing. We actually had the CEO of Atari, Wade Rosen. He came by for an interview last year at MinMax. And the weird thing is, it turns out he lives like a mile away from me in Minneapolis here.
Oh, wow.
So he just came to the studio for the interview, which is a real treat. And
that's cool.
Yeah, the angle that he is taking is he wanted to make just a bunch of small to medium-sized bets with Atari. You know, they're not going to go all in and try and make a AAA Yars game and end up destroying the entire operation, but just small. Like he said, he wanted to hit a lot of singles. That was the goal for Atari. So it's an angle.
Trying to hit a single. That's what I would say, you know, and hey, nothing wrong with that. You know, we're literally in an indie world showcase, right? This is a smaller, you know, smaller budget projects. I don't know. I have to say I was a little disappointed by what I saw of Yars Rising. If you were like, hey, Jeff, we got a budget. We're going to make a sequel to Yars Revenge or another game in the Yars universe. I probably would say, oh, cool. Let's make some sort of bullet hell shooter. You're a little spaceship. You're flying around. That just seems, I don't know where you get this. Like, you're a girl in this platforming world and you're hacking and you're like, it just feels completely removed from any, it's kind of lip service to, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter at a certain level, but I don't know. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a loading mini game that's right up your alley, man.
When it showed her hacking and it was like a, you know, pixelized, almost like a, you know, a very simplistic Atari game, I was like, oh, here we go.
Now this is gameplay, baby.
And now is it got Yars Revenge inside this other game? Then I'm in.
The problem is you already got the Revenge as the first game. You know, right. It'd be like if you got Empire Strikes Back for a long time and then you got A New Hope. And it's like, there are no Jedi in this. This isn't what I wanted. This isn't what I signed up for at all.
Maybe this will explain all the lore that I didn't get in Yars Revenge. You know,
there you go.
All the deep, deep lore of that game. Christian Spicer, any pulls from the Nintendo Indie World Showcase that tickled your fancy?
You both mentioned the Apple Arcade stuff. On this show, I have sung the praises of Apple Arcade many a times, and I will continue to. I don't remember where I saw this. I didn't know I was going to say it, so I'm not prepared. But Apple Arcade, I've seen other folks say that Apple Arcade is the closest we're ever going to get to a Dreamcast 2. It has so many quirky Sega games on there. It has a 3D Sonic now. It has a Puyo Puyo game. It has a Samba de Amigo game. It has, man, there's like two or three others. Does it have a Choo Choo Rocket? I think it might have a Choo Choo. It's so quirky and weird, and I love it. I absolutely love it. So I'm excited to see those games get freed from it, because my favorite games on Apple Arcade, I usually play with my Backbone controller. And so I think that they are made better with the controller. So I love seeing Splintered Fate is a really good Hades like.
Right.
It's not as in depth. Its story's not as engaging, but it's not bad. You know, it's not some licensed IP shovelware game. Like, it's a good rogue type game, and I think it treats the IP well also. So I'm excited to have hopefully more people get a chance to play that, and maybe kids that it might be their first rogue type game that gets them into it, because they loved not Shattered Fate, that's this one, the other one, the beat 'em up, whatever it is.
And they like Revenge.
That Revenge, thank you. Or they saw the new movie
Shredder's Rising. Shredder's
that's a bullet hell, Ben. It's a very different game. It's backwards for Shredders. So I think that's really cool. I'm excited about that. The game that won my house, though, was Little Kitty Big City. Yeah. I mean, Little Kitty Big City hit. My kid, my youngest specifically, was like saying the puns at the same time because they were having the same thought. And it was like, can it straight? It's adorable. This is perfect. And like,
is it a Stray prequel? Prequel to Stray?
Maybe it is. Yeah, we get the backstory.
Stray without all that pesky sci-fi stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it won the heart of my youngest, and I think it looks fun. Like you said, it's cozy. It's not. I don't expect it to push the genre forward in any way, shape, or form. But I think there's going to be fun mischief. I think you can get some cool clips out of it, and I think it knows exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it was interesting. I thought there was a lot of games. I mean, maybe Little Kitty Big City as the first one colored my entire perception of the thing, because there were some stuff that didn't fit there. But I just thought there was a lot of games that almost were – it was aimed at little kids or you know, like there's a crafting game. There's these kind of cozy, lovely, colorful things. A lot of which aren't really what gets me excited, particularly. Although I have to say, you know, Europa,
yeah,
looked really delightful. I am into that. I love the developer getting on. He just seemed like a really sweet person, and like personally introducing it at the showcase. And then it looks awesome. Him talking about he wanted to be meditative and kind of zen-like, and it does feel like this gorgeous world that you're kind of flying around and skimming on water. And I was like, I could get into this Europa game. I don't know what you do in it other than experience the world, but I'm in.
Yeah, there's a demo out now. I checked it out a little bit, and it is, you know, it feels a little Journey-esque. It's the type of, you know, soft exploration, relaxing platformer, but it's a type of platformer where you don't mind it feeling floaty. It's like, no, this should have me floating around this environment, and it's just perfect. And I guess the developer, he was an environment artist at Blizzard for years and years. Wow. And so if you look at it through that lens, it's like, okay, these do kind of look like the most beautiful Overwatch maps you could imagine. But now if you could just like peacefully run throughout them, like that sounds great. And so, you know, I played the demo for a little bit, and I was immediately sold. I was like, yep, I cannot wait for this final release.
That's basically how I play Overwatch anyway. Just run from all the chaos.
And, yeah, exactly.
Try to stay hidden as long as I can.
Yep.
The other game I have to mention, because I'm such a huge SteamWorld fan, is SteamWorld Heist 2. I loved SteamWorld Heist 1. It's an awesome game, and I love – they're just cranking these things out. I think SteamWorld build hasn't even officially come out. I think it's only in early access, and yet here we have the next SteamWorld game. I love that. I love the idea of this franchise, that it's all these different genres all in the same sort of, you know, world. And SteamWorld Heist is an awesome game. August 8th for SteamWorld Heist 2. It looks so good. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, for sure. Also, shout out, you know, we talked about the classic Little Kitty in That Big City, but Cat Quest 3, it feels like just some mobile game trash name. However, I will point out, it's the third Cat Quest game, obviously, and I tried to mock the name Cat Quest 3 on the MinMax Show podcast, and Michael Huber from Easy Allies, who's joining us at MinMax for a bit here, he put me in my place like, dude, those Cat Quest games rule. Like, everybody overlooks them, but they are so good. Just really tight little action RPGs. And you look at like Cat Quest 1 and 2, they're sitting at overwhelmingly positive on Steam. I'm sorry, positive.
Hey.
But it's the name, you read right past it, but that might be a better game than people give it credit for.
Yeah. I mean, I love the art style of it, and it looks like the combat's really solid. That aesthetic of the sort of like big, like the tiny map world, overworld, and then but kind of big ships floating across it.
Yeah,
I love that. It strikes me, that aesthetic. I'm drawn to it. I've never played any of the Cat Quest games, but maybe this will be the one. Although it comes out opposite SteamWorld Heist 2 on the same day, August 8th.
Ooh, yeah, that is weird. Ooh, yeah. Classic faux pas.
Anything else, Christian, that you you saw that looked cool?
Those are the big ones for me. We've hit on them. I've said this before with other console showcases, and I don't want to leave Nintendo out of it. There are too many of these. There's too many of them. That's my old card. I'm not saying it needs to be E3, but it's just there are so many of these things all the time. And I do wonder if I'm alone in that of just like, okay, here's another 100 games that look pretty good.
Yeah.
And I guess a showcase is better than no showcase and not giving them a spotlight, but it's
also
a lot,
as
man.
A co-host of a weekly podcast that needs content to talk about. Let's be a little grateful.
There aren't enough. Yeah, that's right.
I think even PlayStation, the same day or maybe the day after the Nintendo Indie World Showcase, they did their thing of like, here's like six indie games. We're just going to make a Twitter thread about it. Like all these first parties, I feel like are just overflowing for like, we need to promote these games somehow. And I don't know if it doesn't make the cut for a showcase, what else can we do with it? So it's fun to see everyone just trying to get the word out about these games wherever they can.
I have a slightly related take, which I've said before, but bears repeating, is I love the style of these showcases. Nintendo does it frequently. Other people have been doing it where it'll show you get a little moment with the developers, you know, and invariably these delightful looking people, you know, there's one with their dog.
They know they're leaning into the pets. They're smart. Yep.
Very just sweet looking humans that are working on this game. And I can't help but thinking every time it's like, hey, it's five of us here making this game about quilting. And I'm like, does this support you as a full-time job?
Yeah.
Is this how do these little obscure little things make any money at all? I do not know.
No, it is interesting. Look, you're too empathetic of a person. You're just watching us wondering, what's going on? What's your living situation like?
Yes.
Are you okay?
Are you all right? Yes, I want you to succeed. And I don't know if Anton Blast will be the game to do it for you. You know, like,
right,
I don't know. I love that there's room in the marketplace for all of these indies and all of these interesting ideas that are very niche of a niche.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand how there's any, you know, there's like half a dozen games we haven't even talked about that I go, how many people are going to play Valley Peaks? How many people are going to play Lorelei and the Laser Eyes? Like, what's the market for the? They must. I don't know how it works. Well, I am baffled.
These are the
by
games
it
that are getting shouted out, also because there are
right. Yeah,
hundreds of. I mean, the way Steam does it is Steam's like, here's the next fest demo. Go eat.
Find it yourself. Figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's wild. Yeah. We have a show at MinMax, which I didn't name. It was eventually voted on that this was the name, but it's Cream of the Steam, where we go through and just play. We download every game that was released on Steam within the last month. And then we go through and just jump through those. And that's just like the weirdest look at the industry, just
it's
to see
be
like
hundreds in a month.
Oh, it's so many. It's so many to go through,
man.
But it's bizarre. Cause you're used to these showcases where there's some curation. Then you actually jump into the trenches on Steam and see like, there's so many games, some yes quite good that just you never hear about at all. So just go check out some new releases, everybody. Just see what the industry is actually doing out there. Cause it's fascinating.
That Europa guy, he was like, I started working on this 6 years ago. And I'm like, I mean, you must have another job, right? what? It's just these labors of love. And you love to see it. But I'm rooting for these folks to make a living, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's barely related. But when I was thinking about you guys today, I was thinking about, you know what I want from this show? I would love for you two just to walk through what an average day looks like for you guys. Because I have no idea what your lives are like.
Us?
I'm not talking like family stuff. What are you guys doing all day, all week? Like outside of this show, are you just sending emails to say, hey, I can host something, need freelance host? If you could just map out your weeks, I would be fascinated. Because I don't know what the hell is going on in your lives.
I suspect it's very similar to yours. I do a lot of shows, Ben.
Yeah.
I do a lot of shows. Like so you.
Just, okay, so just jump in between all these different shows, but they're all like different networks, different people, blah, 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 blah.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Sending emails and receiving emails is just logistics is the most time consuming of my life. It's like figuring things out when that's going to happen, this is going to happen. It's that's the most annoying part for sure.
Right. And but, Christian, you're just bugging Neil Druckmann about Last of Us Part 3, or what does your week look like?
I mean, if we're going to pull the curtain back, I mean, I just know now, Ben, that you don't read your emails because every day I email you my itinerary and I'm like, 8:05, get the kids to school.
I would honestly appreciate it just to know what everyone else is up to. I think it's so fascinating.
Is your week, I'm assuming, is extremely full as well. You do what? 400 shows on Min-Max?
400 shows. No, yeah. Not that many. Yeah, we pack our weeks. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and then try and leave Thursdays and Fridays for a little bit more of kind of the business end stuff of like reaching out and planning stuff for the next week and all that stuff. Yeah. So I think it's really easy in the Patreon world and the independent media world and all this stuff to just create a lot of treadmills for yourself.
Yes.
You know, and so, and then you set expectations with the community because of that. And so I'm proud of how we've run MinMax so far of like, all of our shows will have a purpose, you know, hopefully they're driving people towards the Patreon without nickel and diming them. And so we're not in full on wild sprint mode. Like I'm happy with all of our content. We care about all the content we're putting out, but then this is a backhanded compliment, or maybe it's just a complete compliment, but I look at like a place like Kinda Funny and you're like, hey, here's all the content we're releasing this week. And I look at it like, yeah, who can consume all of that? Like, yeah, I feel like we're pushing the boundaries for our, you know, community and how much people can consume. So just trying to be, hopefully smart and strategic and making content that people care about. You know?
See, this is why we do two, maybe three shows a week for the DLC patrons. You know, it's just, we respect your time, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it. That's what it is.
I'm convinced that, you know, we all know Greg Miller is a big Ghostbusters fan. I'm convinced he's a ghost. I think he was possessed by one of these super beings that have all these powers to make all this content and have it all be incredible. And he just hasn't told anyone. No Ghostbusters have shown up because he's not like sliming or wrecking a library.
Right.
He's just wrecking everybody else. Maybe he is. That is Wednesday's show for them, is library wrecking.
They're I got to tell you, Christian, inhuman. I, for one, ain't afraid of no Greg. we're totally off in a wild tangent, but I'm enjoying it, so I'm going to continue. The other thing I suspect we have in common, Ben, again, you're younger than I.
We've married the same person. I don't know if you knew that, but
big reveal. Big reveal, here it comes. No, we started the show, Christian and I, in Los Angeles. I was living in Los Angeles. Christian's still in Los Angeles, but it's a different world there. Now that I live in Denver, and you know, you're doing the show not in Los Angeles as well. You're in like real America, you know, as I like to call it.
And that's right.
Everybody that I encounter, all the people that I have met having moved here, most of which are parents of my kids' classmates, but they all have like normal human jobs, you know, which is a complete revelation to me because all you meet in Los Angeles are other weirdos that hustle like you do, you know?
Yeah.
And meeting actual humans that are like, no, you know, I get home at 5 and I'm done with my job. And then I don't think about it until I go in the next morning. And then on the weekends, I don't think about it at all. And I'm like, what life is that?
Right, right.
I can't fathom. I'm always stressed out.
Yeah, it's got to be worth it though, because you still have some flexibility in the schedule. But I was thinking about that the other day of like, I have, you know, been hosting gaming podcasts for like a decade now, and I just can't imagine not constantly taking up my phone and Google Notes and writing down just, oh, got to remember to do this. Oh, here's a thought for a game. I got to frame it this way next week. Oh, let's try and line up this guest. Like just not having that constant little positive treadmill in my own mind running. Like, can you imagine having a job where you don't have to take notes? What would that be like?
I can't imagine a job where I'm not, you know, they say, do what you love and you'll never work another day in your life. But the, you know, the corollary to that is, you know, do what you love and you're never not working, you know?
Right.
Like you're all, because you're doing what you love. Yes, but it's your job too. So I don't know. I'm not complaining, but it's just a weird thing to see how normies live, you know?
Yeah. Hey, let's go down this rabbit hole. What does your retirement look like, Jeff Panetta?
Well, I'm married into one. I'm married into retirement, as has Christian. That's our whole plan is we married people that have real jobs.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I don't know where you stand in that regard, but
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Married somebody with a real job. Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just wondering, like, are you going to be doing this at 73?
I hope this is our last episode. We weren't going to announce this till the end, Ben. But
I stress about that very much. I mean, I don't know. I have no backup plan. That's the problem.
Yeah,
is that I have no sellable skills at this point, and I'm getting old enough that a career change is untenable for me. So I'm hoping that enough people still want to hear what I have to say. This is like a completely different podcast now. But yeah, okay, we're in it. My wife and I have this conversation a lot because, you know, I get stressed out and I get very worried, and she is, bless her heart, a voice of reason for me. And that she's saying, you know, there's nothing to point to, 72 to use her number, 72 year old person doing this. Well, that's because it wasn't possible a generation ago, right?
Right.
We are the first generation, or at least I am because I'm old. But, you know, there's no equivalent. This was the first time this has been possible. So we're sort of finding out if it's going to last. And the only thing that you can kind of point to is sports, right? You know, like Tony Kornheiser is in almost 80 and he's still talking about sports. It's like, I think that's going to be what it is. And my wife keeps saying to me, you know, the people are aging with you and they don't want to hear some young whippersnapper talking about games because they're contemporary to your age. So I'm hoping everybody listening will stick with me as long as I want to do this. That's my answer. Was that what you're thinking? What are you thinking?
No. Yeah. I don't think I'll be able to retire, and not a matter of like, oh, I'm chained to this desk, but it's like, I don't think I'd want to. I think it'd be really, I mean, I went on paternity leave not too long ago, and I had a really tough time with it emotionally. Like, love the baby, love the experience, but at the same time, like, unplugging from work for 2 months, I was like, I'm losing my mind.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I think, I think I need to have that little bit of an engine, a little bit of a focus for like, well, life is chaos, but here's something orderly. I can talk about the games on a regular basis, you know? And so I think it's kind of addicting on that front.
Well, congratulations on fatherhood.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. He's doing great. Yeah. Oh,
wonderful. Anyway, that's the Nintendo Indie World Showcase.
There we go.
We're going to go into our next story, but first we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Christian, DLCpod.com was built on Squarespace. Because why? Why? Tell me why you decided to go with Squarespace.
Easy, reliable. It has all the features we need it to have. And I know that when folks are looking for the podcast on the web, it's going to be up. They can find it. Everything's going to work. And heaven forbid, should I need to jump in and change anything, Jeff? I can do it. And do you know what I'm not? A web developer.
Yeah, well, that's honestly what I thought you were going to say, is that because we're idiots and...
No, we're smart. That's the one thing we're smart about. I use Squarespace because I'm smart, because I'm an idiot about everything else.
That's right. We don't know how to do much. It's nice when we can find tools that make our lack of skill invisible to the end user. That's the goal. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs like us, for everyday Joes like us, to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. Squarespace has a bevy of really awesome features, including new Blueprint AI and SEO tools. You can start a completely personalized website with their new guided design system called Squarespace Blueprint. You choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or your business, or optimized for every device. It's so simple. It's so easy. And if you're taking payments on your website, well, that's simple too. You can make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. You can accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, in eligible countries. You can even offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Plus, that Squarespace AI helps you kickstart or update written content on your website. You can do product descriptions or emails with Squarespace AI. It generates instant personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You can sell content. You can make videos. Everything is easy on Squarespace. So check it out for yourself. Head over to squarespace.com/DLC when you're ready to launch. And it'll save you 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's right, 10% off by going to squarespace.com/DLC and using our promo code DLC. Squarespace, we love them. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week and or existential crisis?
I mean, how regular are your bowel movements? That's what I'm like. As I sit here all day at my desk, I don't have to. There's a couple of great Sony stories. Well, interesting. One of them is not great. But the one I want to focus on is the Ghost of Tsushima PC port. I am a big fan of that game. I loved that game. I especially loved the PS5 update they did. And Jeff, you and I have talked about on this show numerous times how probably 99%, 95% of the Sony PC ports are outstanding. There have been a few that did not launch great. They all got there, but there were a few that were rough. But for the most part, they're really good when they come out. Granted, sometimes they come out 2 years after they came out on console, and sometimes they're Bloodborne, never to see the light of day. They took a wrong turn and the wolf killed them. That's what happened to Bloodborne, is they couldn't get out of the starting area. But with Ghost of Tsushima, we're learning not only is this PC port coming and it looks fantastic, but they're also rolling out, for lack of a better descriptor for it, a PlayStation wrapper over the experience, which brings in your PlayStation friends, PlayStation trophies, in a very PlayStation UI user experience overlay. They're certainly not the first company to have it's not really a launcher, but an overlay over some other version of a game running. Steam has one.
Xbox has been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Right?
Play anywhere.
Right, but not the way you interface with it has been a little different on Xbox. Like where, yes, the save from PC can carry over. This to me really looks like more of a unified, at least an attempt at a unified experience across console and PC. And this, coupled with, seriously, how many times do you guys poop in a day? coupled with the statement that they were looking to bring PSVR 2 to PC.
Right.
And also coupled to that, now we're tripled. How huge Helldivers 2 remains.
Yeah.
And that was a first and a very rare day and date PC PS5 release. And I think this is all pointing to some very interesting stuff that also kind of goes with what Phil Spencer said on the Xbox podcast a couple of months ago of like, we got to expand our audience. And I think Sony's approach to it now is becoming very interesting, even if it's not fully formed. And I think this Ghost of Tsushima stuff is another toe or perhaps whole leg into the water of creating something cohesive, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. It is interesting. I have a question for Ben on this front. How, for some reason, Sony in particular, but most of the platform holders don't view PC as a competitor. What's to stop them from just not seeing anybody as a competitor? You know, I think Xbox has been flirting with this, much to some of their ardent fans' chagrin. But this notion of, we just want you to be able to play. We are one place you can play. But, you know, Dennis Dyack said this in the early 2000s, the one console future, just give us the DVD player. Like, all, you don't care who made the DVD player. The DVD player isn't specific to one company. It doesn't have exclusives. It's just a device to help you play the content. And some DVD players do it better than others. And maybe you want to shop around for the best DVD player. But ultimately, why do we even want a situation where the boxes are different? Maybe this is taking this story and spinning it too far, but I think this might be baby steps that direction.
Yeah, it's easy, I guess, if you're in the number one seat like Sony, or your stuff doesn't port as easily to the Nintendo Switch, right?
Yeah.
But it feels like we're going that direction. It seems like Microsoft is ready to play ball on every frontier. And I do wonder, how much Helldivers 2 has shifted their perspective on the success of lining up that marketing for one blast across the two platforms. You know, like,
yeah,
if I ever get to the pearly gates, I'm going to ask one thing, and it's just to see what would happen if Helldivers 2 launched on PS5 and then later on PC. Do you think it'd be as successful? Like, that's the type of stuff I really want to know, you know?
I would venture to say I think the answer is a pretty clear no. I think it being on PC day and date was a huge boon for that game, I believe. I still haven't played it on PlayStation. I've only played it on PC.
Yeah.
And I think it was a massive shot in the arm to that game. Is it just a huge group of people got to experience it, and it became the zeitgeist.
And with cross play as well.
Yes.
Eventually, I still don't think cross progression has been added. It was promised. I don't think it's been added. But cross play, I also think, was huge for it. And I think part of what's been holding people back from this one console future is the money you make by being the console, you know, the license holder, that 30% cut. And I wonder if the reason that people don't see PC as a competitor yet is it's very expensive to create that storefront that works and competes with Steam. And for better or worse, and I think probably for better, even though I don't love Epic Store, Epic has the money and they have been battling, and that has brought that Steam cut into a lower and lower and lower number, because Epic has all of the money to kind of declare war on this digital storefront.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if companies would feel comfortable, you know, giving that up. The old, to use my first old card, which Jeff, you've used too. So technically you've been red carded out of this podcast already. I'm just using my first old card, or receiving my first old card.
The good thing about being as old is I don't remember how many I've done.
The idea was like consoles were sold at a loss because that company, Nintendo, Sony, Sega, Microsoft, whomever, makes their money back saying, hey, Ben, yeah, everybody owns our console. You want a game on here? Pay us. Mm-hmm. Pay us money to put your thing on our thing. And everybody would be like, please take our money because we need you to sell our thing. And I think we're seeing those walls come down, and the shift is to subscriptions.
I guess to sort of steer this back to the actual substance of the story here, Ben, what do you think about this being the case for Ghost of Tsushima? And do you think this will be the wave going forward for Sony's PC releases? Are we going to see this sort of integrated PlayStation experience be, I don't know, retro applied to some of the other PC releases?
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Do you think there's a benefit to them for doing that?
Yeah, I think so. Unify the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can help you with trophies if you're into that whole sort of thing.
Right.
So yeah, I could see it being the new staple. I'd be curious, yeah, how far back they'd go if they started putting it into, you know, Miles Morales on PC and
right.
Ratchet and Clank and stuff like that. I wonder just if Sony does not have the numbers of developers to make day and date PC stuff happen. I remember for God of War, they said it took years to create the PC port. And we have Nixis, I think, is the team that brought Ghost of Tsushima over to PC here. And so like they're doing a lot of work on Sony's part here to bring this stuff to the PC, but to your point, Christian, about, you know, where we're going to be going in the future and all this stuff, like Ghost of Tsushima 2, like that is going to be an interesting case of like, if that launches day and date on PC, that's kind of the new wave. You know, I'm curious to see what the next AAA Sony game would be and if they could potentially line things up to kind of unify the ecosystem moving forward.
Yeah. Well, we'll see Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut on PC May 16th, which is right around the corner. Just a quick note for folks that might be excited about this, you do need a PlayStation account to make it work. So you don't actually have to have a PlayStation. You just have to have a PlayStation account on their website to activate this on the PC version. And then that gives you your PlayStation friends list if you have that, trophy settings, profile, all that stuff. You know, it's pretty cool.
And cross-play as well between PS and PC because the Legends mode, it's really cool. It's a really cool kind of PvE mode that was added, I think, to the – it was free DLC, I think, but it was around the time it got ported or upgraded for PS5. So that's cool to be able to expand that player base.
Very cool. Well, we'll stick with Sony for my story of the week because we've gotten some – of the first info about the PlayStation 5 Pro. We talked about this a few weeks ago about how the Sony is on track, according to reports, to release a PlayStation Pro sort of half-step upgrade, as they have done the last couple of generations, this year. It's on track to come out at the end of 2024, although, of course, none of this official yet. But there's a lot of sort of insiders have reported. Another insider has reported, this was reported to The Verge, first reported by Insider Gaming and then corroborated by The Verge, about what people might be able to expect from an enhanced version of their games on PlayStation 5 Pro. Because last time we talked about this, while it sounded really cool, and it certainly sounds like a beefier version of the hardware, we weren't sure what that meant for the games themselves. What actual benefits are you going to get from playing your PlayStation 5 library on the PlayStation 5 Pro? Well, according to this Insider Gaming and The Verge's reporting, this means that there'll be a sticker on their games. Some of them will need patches to make this work. But there will be a sticker that says enhanced for PlayStation 5 Pro, which can mean one of several things. Those things are, the game has a completely new PS5 Pro graphics mode that will support this new PSSR, sort of like DLSS what's Radeon's version of that? The FSR. It's the new, you know, upscaling super resolution, upscaling and ray tracing 60 frames per second. So that's maybe one of the things that this enhanced mode could indicate. Another is the game has a higher fixed resolution cap at 30 frames per second. So it's up to like 2160p from 1440p. Or a game could have a higher maximum target resolution. So that's between 1280p and 2160p, which is up from 1080p and 1440p. So higher resolution. Or the game could just add ray tracing support. So maybe the new hardware would just allow a game to add ray tracing. This will be different game to game. You won't necessarily know. It'll just say enhanced for PS5 Pro. You don't know which of those things it will have. But that is presumably the big benefit of getting a new console this holiday.
Okay, but what does that look like in a commercial?
In a commercial, it's you've got to have it. You know,
the commercial is the most powerful console to play Grand Theft Auto 6.
That's exactly it. Honestly, that's it. Yep,
that's the console.
When Grand Theft Auto 6 comes out in 6 to 8 months from now.
No, I do think. Yeah. I mean, everybody going like, we don't even need a PS5 Pro. I hear you, but I do think that has to be a discussion within Sony. Like, if they can build like the place to play GTA 6 at 4K 60 on console is only on the PS5 Pro. Like that's something.
Yeah, I'm sure. I wonder how many meetings they're in right now going, can we bundle the game? Is there a bundled PS5 Pro version, a SKU we can come up with? I don't think you guys are wrong about that. But I think that, you know, these potential GTA 6 delays are going to put a wrench in that. But, yeah. You know, who knows? Do you think, Ben, that's enough? Do you think it's enough to get like higher resolution, maybe some super sampling, maybe some ray tracing where you didn't get it? Is that enough to sell this thing?
People will buy it.
Yeah.
Look, it'll sell out, but probably it's not going to be, it's not going to be a juggernaut. I don't think, unless, you know, be diabolical, is if in all the games, if you just had a regular PS5, they had the option of like PS5 enhanced, super great edition, but it was always like grayed out in the performance options, you know, so it was always just teasing you that it was right there. But hey, you want to actually select that, you got to buy the PS5 Pro. I think that's the only way you could compel a lot of people, because I feel like it's just been, we've been sold this since the PS4 Pro of just like, hey, you want 4K 60? Buy this one. Okay, yeah, you got the PS4 Pro, great. Now the PS5, you want 4K 60? Here you go. It's like, well, not so much. Okay, but the PS5 Pro, it's like, how many times can they make this pitch? I don't get it.
You're not wrong. You know, PS5 was like, we're going to do 8K. And we're like, really? Because we haven't even gotten 4K yet. Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But there's an audience for it. They'll want the super high-end thing. So why not? And I'm honestly, you know, upsampling all this stuff, that's all going to be great. I just want to see what it looks like when Sony takes the second crack at the PS5 design, like for the actual console itself. You know, the PS5 Slim, not really that different at all. But like, would they radically change the way it looks, you think, for the PS5 Pro?
I wonder. I don't think the Pro version of the PS4 looked that much different, did it?
It was like chunkier.
An extra pancake on top. Basically all that's going on there.
Maybe we get some waffles on this one.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I don't know. Christian, what do you think? Is this tantalizing, or is it just sort of like minor, too minor to care?
Yeah, I think I'm the weirdo of this group. I have not bought a single Pro console. It has never been the cost benefit there for me in terms of enough games utilizing it, where even if it was grayed out, that I'd feel like I'd be missing out. Bulk of the user base is going to be on a base PlayStation, and the game needs to be really good on that PlayStation. And so while I love shiny new and I love a beefy GP, it's really expensive. And I don't know what to do with the existing console. You sell it, trade it in somewhere. Those somewheres you can do that are becoming fewer and far between.
Well, you have closets, Christian.
I moved to Denver where I have actual space and a thing called a closet to put it in. This isn't super appealing to me. What I am more curious about is what this launches at price-wise, but even more curious than that, what it might do to the base PS5's price, if anything. Because that's what it usually excites me about this mid-gen console. The conversation used to be, oh crap, here it is, my second old card of the episode. We still got a lot of episode left. You'd hit that $99 price point, or that $199 price point, right? It was getting to the mass appeal, quote-unquote, price point. And I think now we've kind of moved away from that. And it's like, no, we're going for the techies. Welcome to mid-gen. Everything's more expensive. What? It doesn't feel good. No. So I'm hopeful that the price of the base PS5 could come down. We've seen some sales and some bundles, but I hope that continues and more folks that haven't been able to get in feel comfortable jumping in, because there are some great games on the PlayStation 5.
It's wild to think about. I mean, even the Nintendo Switch, I don't think they've dropped that price, and it's kind of proven they don't need to. Granted, they're cheaper than a PS5, you know, but like, maybe the lesson is now like, we know people will come to us. We're not interested in that super low price point anymore.
Yeah. And good luck trying to get a deal on, I don't know, Mario Kart from 6 years ago, you know, whatever.
From the Wii U.
Oh, that is full price game. I'm like, meanwhile, you know, games that came out 3 weeks ago are like, hey, a Steam sale. It's 50% off.
Skull and Bones. We'll give you $20. Just play it, please.
Exactly. Nintendo's like, we're not dropping any prices anytime. See, the reason I'll buy it is because it says Pro at the end, and I'm like,
oh, smart.
I don't want to be like an amateur player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they should rename the original model the PS5 Amateur now.
PS5 Loser Edition. I don't want to be that guy.
What do you want me to do?
PS5 Miners, and when you buy the Pro, they call you up. You know, the manager calls you into the office. Yeah. All right, I want you to do two things for me, Ben. One, when you get home, I want you to write your mom a letter. Handwrite your mom a letter. She supported you a lot getting you here. Two, call your high school video game console. I want you to call your high school video game console and tell them those years. I'm telling you this because you got called up, Ben. You're going PS5 Pro.
Take my money.
It's a Bull Durham situation. All right. Well, that's the stories of the week. Let's take another quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with our playlists. All right. Let's talk about the games that we have been playing this week in a segment we call The Playlist.
Ooh, it's
Ben, you have been playing a number of interesting things. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with a game that we glossed over from the Nintendo Indie World. Too busy talking about bowel movements or something. but this is a game that was on Apple Arcade. And I forget if you guys played it back when it came out in 2022 there, but now it's on the Nintendo Switch, but it's called Stitch.
I have not played this. I was... it's not really my jam, but is it good? Is it fun? Is it good?
It's fun and good. It's everything you want in a game, Jeff. So right. Crossword puzzles isn't your thing. Picross isn't your thing.
Oh, am I confusing this with another game? I might be. This isn't the actually stitching a quilt game.
It kind of looks like that, but it's really just kind of a light puzzle game. It's all embroidery themed.
Yeah.
But the idea is like, okay, we have some design here. It's a little cute doggy on a boat. And so it's like, okay, you can kind of see the colors that go with what, but then it's a matter of like, okay, this square here, I know that's four. So where are the four? Look, explaining how it actually works for the features is going to be confusing, but feels,
it's like Sudoku basically.
Feels a little bit like that. Yeah. Hmm. As you're slowly figuring these things out.
Okay.
It is so fun. I cannot stop playing. Really? I was late to my nephew's birthday party. He's like, I just want to finish this one puzzle. It's going to be so sweet. And like, yeah, I've never really gotten into Picross, but this feels like Picross for morons. It's Picross combined with like a coloring book, you know, in some ways where it's like you can find the puzzles in there that are more complex. They have daily puzzles, which do take a lot of brain power to try and map out how is this picture coming together here. But by and large, it's satisfying just to have a little bit of a brain teaser, a little bit of a scratch there going on. But then you can work on stuff that's like an extra, extra large embroidery. Is that what you'd call that?
I don't have any
idea. Or maybe cross stitch. No, it's not. Yeah. I don't know. But
one of those types of things. But just, you know, you can work on some of these. I mean, I did one with my wife and it took us like maybe 45 minutes of just going through all these. But then when it finally zooms out and you see the picture you were making the whole time, it's like, oh, so satisfying. You can like use a touchscreen on the Switch for the Switch version as well. But yeah, it came out of the blue for me, but Stitch, it really, really grabbed my attention.
I might have to grab this on Apple Arcade since I already have it available to me on Apple Arcade. I've not even heard of this game, but now it sounds, and even watching I kind of zoned out on the thing because I was like, I don't care about quilting, or whatever this is.
Because you think it's just like a cozy game, but it is just kind of a simple puzzle game, you know, if you're into that type of thing.
Here's the question. Do you think the puzzles are too intense for young kids? Because I was like, maybe I'll show this to my kids.
Maybe conceptually. No, I think you could do it. I think there are like easy enough puzzles in there. If they're into, I don't know. I want to say there are numbers. So as long as they're not scared of numbers and math, but it's just a matter of like figuring out the different quadrants. And I think the pictures look cool when they're finished. So I think it would work for them. But you know, you talk about not hearing this. I do think as great as Apple Arcade is and how it's the Dreamcast 2 we've always wanted it to be, like at the same time, no one talks about those games.
It's
on
so
there.
True.
You know, like it was a while ago. There's a game called Sping. Not Stitch. This is Sping, but it's on Apple Arcade, and it feels a little bit like Pixel Junk Eden. If you remember really? That game,
I love that game so very much.
Okay, but
one
Sping
of my favorite
that...
games of all time. Seriously.
Ooh. Oh my God, you need to check out Sping.
Sping.
Yeah, you play it with just one hand, super easy, one button. But I like it more than Pixel Junk Eden. It doesn't have the presentation and the music, obviously, that game did. But Sping, it was so great, just the perfect little action game for your phone and. Like no one ever talked about it online. There's like one Polygon article about it and that's it. And I feel like a lot of this Apple Arcade stuff is just sent to die. So that's why I'm happy for a game like Stitch to come out on the Switch and hopefully find a new audience, you know?
Man, I totally agree. It is a weird thing. And I think it's the sort of mobile thing of there's just, it's just a sea of content. And even Apple saying, hey, we've got this curated list of games that we think are good. Even that isn't enough to make it stand out from this just wash of who knows what you're getting into Wild West mobile apps, you know?
Same with Netflix. I don't have the article in front of me, but it was something like 0.05% of Netflix subscribers had played a Netflix game, a game, yeah. you know, one of those games. Yeah. And it's like Oxenfree 2, Into the yeah. Breach.
Great games.
Is it Hades or just Dead Cells? Like, you know, games, and then also like Love Island, Romance Simulator, and Match 3s. But it's got like a wide variety of selection of content. And, you know, for whatever reason, these things don't get a lot of traction. But Apple Arcade, it's fantastic. Like, legitimately fantastic. And yes, no one talks about it.
You know, a game we did play, I did play on my television just last night for the first time. Wheel of Fortune. Played Wheel of Fortune. My son found it. He's like, Dad, there's Wheel of Fortune on the TV. And I was like, okay, let's play it. And 14 seconds into it, it's like, you could earn 40% more gold by clicking here. I was like, ah, no, turn it off.
No, Vanna, no.
What have you done to me, Pat? Anyway, that's Stitch on yeah. Switch. I will be downloading Sping.
Why aren't people talking about these? They're so fun to say.
What else is on your playlist, Ben?
Man, I just want to poke Christian, because in last week's episode, you're like, oh, I'm like halfway through Rebirth, but I'm going to get through this sucker. I'm going to do it. And so I just want to see if you've made any progress on Rebirth here.
Embargo tells me that I have not put any more time into Rebirth between last week's episode and this week's episode. There have been other games that some other time will be discussed that have been sucking me away from Rebirth. I still plan to. I'm still slogging my way through it. Folks in our Discord.
He's not going to do it. I can hear it in his voice. He's done. Yeah.
Ben,
he's done.
Ben, this, if it were last year, I would say you're right. I am not going to do it. But this year, I'm looking at that release calendar. I really think I'm going to do it. Like, I'm working my way through it. Our community's playing it. We've had people coming to it new that didn't start it right when it came out. Folks now, we've seen people talking about it in our Discord about like, oh, this is kind of just Horizon. Like, once it opens up, it's like really similar to something like Horizon Forbidden West, but with party. And this is awesome. And I was like, that's the version that Jeff needs to hear about.
I know.
To get him to even start it.
60 hours in, it gets real good.
No, it's probably four of those. Yeah, it opens up quick. It opens up quick, and then it's just committing to the combat. And what once you do, I mean, again, it is what it is, right? It's Final Fantasy. It's silly at probably 30% of the time. It's just totally kooky and tonally not serious. But man, the combat's exquisite, and I do plan to keep going back to it. It's just sometimes hard when it's like, oh, here's this other thing that I can finish and then talk about.
Ben, didn't you guys over at MinMax do like an absurdly long deep dive on this game?
Wow, yeah. Yeah, we have a whole series called The Deepest Dive, which, Jeff, I would argue they're the best, most thorough discussions about games on the internet.
That's what I meant. Did I not say that? That's what I was thinking.
So we do a handful a year and just select a game and go all in, and we play through it as a group, and then we also collect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments from Patreon supporters and sprinkle those throughout the discussions. And we take each game and break it up into multiple sections. So yeah, we just wrapped up The Deepest Dive on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and it clocked in at 23 hours of talking about that game. But
The 22nd hour is when it gets really good. No, I'm just giving you a bad time. That's amazing. That's an amazing level of commitment to the content. That's why MinMax is so awesome, honestly.
Oh, that's like, very sweet.
Really, really cool to even attempt that feat.
I promise it's fun to listen to. I promise we have fun the entire time, because that could be a slog, but it's a fun group. We're in the studio together and then just reading all these great comments from the community. The angle is like, oh, it feels like we're giving these games the discussion they deserve. Because like, I played through Rebirth and my brain is just being lit on fire because I love Final Fantasy VII so much. It's like my favorite game ever. This is dorky. I took 91 pages of notes while playing that
game. Holy mackerel.
I really went above and beyond and became obsessed with it. And so just to have an outlet for like, okay, let's just gush about everything that we love. Well, not just kissing ass all the time. There's a lot of criticisms you can have for that game for sure. But yeah, I was so in love with that game and that discussion too, just for having an outlet for like, let's really dive in as much as we want to here. And there's an audience there that is eager to hear about it, which is so sweet.
It's wonderful. It's awesome. And so you're the perfect person to ask about, you know, Rebirth versus remake. Do you think this improves on the first one, or is it sort of just keeping that bar the same, or what's your take?
Yeah, it's less focused than remake, but I do like it a lot more than remake by and large. I think they just nail the tone so well. You say 30% goofy, wacky Final Fantasy stuff. Like, this game is, it is like a Dragon level wacky throughout so much of it. And then it gets very serious and confusing for bits of it too. Even as a big Final Fantasy VII fan, it's like, wait, what are you guys doing here? But no, I think just the tone, I just am so over the moon about the writing, which I never, you know, I don't know, like being a big Final Fantasy fan, it's like you just realize, okay, the writing will be fine. But the fact that these characters are making me laugh so much and it just has the right spirit and the right lighthearted nature, it's such a breath of fresh air, because so much Final Fantasy VII content after the original release has been so self-serious. Yeah. Advent Children thinks it's the coolest goddamn thing on the planet.
Right.
You know, and the Dirge of Cerberus on PS2 with Vincent. I'm the evil vampire guy. And now for this game to, like, they introduce Vincent and then they take the piss out of Vincent within like 30 seconds. Like, they're making jokes about him thinking he's the coolest guy around immediately. And it's like, yes. It's just, as a fan, I just sit back and say, yes, this is the tone, you guys. I don't know how you cobbled this together after all these years, but somehow that team just found the right balance, and it takes it seriously when it needs to, but then also it's a wacky world. Final Fantasy VII is a silly, goofy game, and they embrace that in such a beautiful way.
That's awesome. Well, that makes me want to play it more. Now who has the time for these things?
I get it.
I love it, though. That's cool. It's a Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I also want to hear you talk about... well, let's save that for last. You've been playing a tennis game. I love tennis games.
Yeah.
I do love tennis games.
2K25. It's a little bit like a Dragon's Dogma 2 situation where you realize, oh, it's been 13 years since the last Top Spin game.
Wow,
like,
yeah.
This franchise has been dormant for a long time, but 2K brought it out of retirement here. And now Hangar 13 is the studio developing this new Top Spin, who, you know, made Mafia 3. And they've been dormant and working on a lot of stuff that gets canceled over and over again, it seems like, over there. And so it's cool to see their logo back in the mix here. But yeah, tennis games, like the original Top Spin on the original Xbox, I absolutely love that game. Did you guys play that back in the day?
Yes, I played tons of that game. Like, I and maybe it sounded facetious, but I mean it. I love tennis games.
I was a Virtua Tennis weirdo. Like, that was my, I was like, nah, Top Spin's not for me.
Yeah.
Virtua Tennis is mine. That's the only one I play.
It's so fun, but I'm totally with you. There's something just so simple and pure. And if you want to go back to the roots of video games, like, well, Pong, it's like as iconic as it can get for like a video game interpretation of a sport here. But yeah, I love Top Spin 2K25 so far here.
I think that was Ben pulling the old card real quick.
Oh, no.
He just referenced Pong, everybody.
Damn it. They're corrupting my soul, everybody.
Go ahead.
No. That's all good. So there's not going to be a big campaign that's going to bring you in for some big narrative experience or anything like that for Top Spin 2K25. But just the basics of playing this tennis game feel great. You know, it's like every hit, there's a little timing mini game, right, where you have to hit it right at the right time to get the maximum power and all that stuff. So just having just the most simple approach of having, you know, a time button press for every hit, and then just the light strategy of obviously where you're going to hit it on the tennis court. It's like the combat of a Super Mario RPG or a Sea of Stars, you know, just having that immediate engagement for every action in that game of worrying about the timing, but then also the larger strategy. It's just really satisfying. And my dream is like, oh, if I could get some friends over here to play this game with me, because playing like 4-player Top Spin on the original Xbox, some of my favorite multiplayer gaming ever. It was such a blast. And this is what I want. Like, I'm not going to get serious about the whole online arena in Top Spin 2K25, but it feels good to play. It's fun. I'm really happy the franchise is back here.
That's awesome. I might have to pick this up too. I haven't thought about Top Spin in a long time, but I would I love Mario Tennis. Like, my son and I still play Mario Tennis a lot. I love tennis games, and I loved Top Spin back in the day. So, man, I might have to check this out. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to something that I'm sure lots of people are interested in hearing your take on. I'm sure you've spoken about it over at MinMax, but Hades 2, technical test. And I think all of us were watching with bated breath about how this game, what this game was going to be, how it was going to differ from the first one. Supergiant has, you know, a high bar. Everybody loves Hades. It won a bunch of awards. And this technical test that just happened, tell us your take on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if you guys have a strategy for when you're going to dive into Hades 2. When is the right time? It's going to be an early access for probably years.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to wait for 1.0?
I won't answer for Christian, but my MO has often been, I get so excited, I want to play it, I'll jump in, I'll play intensely for a short period of time, and then I'll pull back and wait.
Yeah. Yep.
I do that with a bunch of early access games. Like, I want to get that first taste, but then I'm like, it's not. I did that with Rogue Legacy 2. I did that with Baldur's Gate 3. I did it with a lot of those games, and I think that's probably what will happen here again.
I'm just surprised they're making a sequel to a game I've never heard about. So I'm excited for it. I think it depends. In this technical test, I really appreciated. I think it depends on how complete it feels.
Yeah.
And I think we might talk about that a little bit, Jeff. Some of these games launch in early access and your progression carries over. And it feels like, it's not a beta, but it really feels close. And with Hades 1, it was pretty close, but that fine tuning went a pretty dang long way into making it, I think, the experience that won all of those Game of the Year awards. And I think the same for me was true with Dead Cells. Like, early access Dead Cells was just a little too rough around the edges. That was more frustrating than fun. But when it came out, maybe it was like even 1.5, like that first big patch into Dead Cells, it was like, this is euphoria for me. So it's always a little bit give and take, but I love how open they're being with,
oh my God,
the rollout of Hades 2. It's beautiful to see.
Yeah, it is so great. And so they did a stream showing off the technical test of Hades 2. And that is how I experienced it. Like, I'll watch Supergiant play this game for several hours and explain it, kind of walk through what stands out to them. And so it's going to be in this technical test for a while. They said they don't know exactly how long, but then when this wraps up, then it's going into early access. They say, like, it could be 1 week, could be 1 month. So early access is coming. And for the technical test, there was still some placeholder character art, stuff like that. But they made it seem like there's going to be a decent amount in there. It's the weirdest way to gauge it. But they said on the music front, they're like, there's already more music in this game, in Hades 2, than there was for all of Hades 1.
Wow.
Just to maybe give you an idea of how much content is going to be in there for this technical test as they go into early access. But this was my way to experience where Hades 2 is at right now, just to see what's going to be going on here. And so the biggest thing is just how focused on magic it is this time around. And it's all about the connections with witchcraft to Greek myth. And so the main character this time around, she's much more focused on magic and putting, magical wards, just like our dear friend Aerith, Christian, on the ground in the battle arena as you're going around. Like, your MP is above your HP in the UI. Like, they're really trying to emphasize that this is going to be a big component. You're crafting spells, going around picking up ingredients, all that stuff. And so that's the angle. But on top of that, it just looks like a great playing sequel to Hades. It's not reinventing the wheel, but it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I was struck by how much it really does look and feel like Hades. Like, you're right, they're not reinventing the wheel, they're not trying to completely change the formula here, but my goodness, does it look pretty already. I love the new environments. They look awesome and looks like a place I want to spend a lot of time. And the fact that we have a new main character and that she kind of behaves a little differently, it's like, I'm already in. I'm ready to go back and see how this this story relates. Like, I'm actually interested in the story, in these games. Very few roguelikes I really care about the story, to be frank.
Right.
But they've managed to make me invested in it, and I'm curious that how this relates and how it connects. It looks so good.
Yeah, and it's funny, as she's encountering different gods in there, you realize, like, oh God, there's so many people that apparently weren't in the last game. Like, Apollo pops up as a character to give you the boons. And you're like, okay, well, this is a new character for Hades. Like, wait, Apollo wasn't in that last game? Like, there's still biggies. And then this is so dorky, but now in, like, your home base, which is called the Crossroads. And overall, your mission is you're trying to take down Kronos, the Titan of Time. And so you're descending into the underworld to try and take down Kronos. So she's going down, whereas Zag was trying to go up. In this Crossroads area, one of the first characters you encounter is Odysseus is down there. And it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. Get to talk to Odysseus and he's giving you tips and stuff, master tactician. And so it's weird just like how you can still get real thrills from, oh, there's still more Greek mythology to mine. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It is cool, like you said, that you were trying to break out of hell, basically,
yeah,
in the first game, and now you're trying to break back in. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So, man, that game, I think, is going to steal a lot of hours of my life.
Isn't it nice to have full faith in a studio like Supergiant?
Yes.
It's like, well, I know they're going to learn a lot from this early access period and spend years just dialing this thing down to a great gaming experience. I'm so happy that team is going strong. They said they have 25 developers there at this point. And it's just like,
so
in terms of unimpeachable studios in the industry, like, they are top of the top tier.
Agreed. 100%. Just home runs. Yeah. Only home runs. Yeah. All right, Christian, why don't we save our early access experience? You and I have both been playing the same game. After you talk about playing the number one app in the App Store, I think 2 weeks running now.
We talked about it. The fact that iOS has opened itself up to emulators a couple weeks ago. Thank you, EU. Also, I guess, thank you again, Epic, for throwing that bag of money around. We're going to litigate. We're going to take on the big guys. Apple, Google, we're taking you to court. You can't do that. And then they just floss and Fortnite money comes out. And like, oh, they can do that. They're continuing to floss.
Look at that.
They're just, wow, okay, this is, now they're RoboCop flossing. This is awkward, but I guess that's how it works. And because of that stuff, the first emulator is out now. Right. Well, there have been others. Others have come out since this change in the iOS App Store policy, and then were delisted for various reasons. But Delta, the Delta emulator, is out on iOS. It is free. It is Game Boy through Nintendo 64 emulation on your iOS device in such, and I know Android's had emulators for a while, and there are whole handhelds made out of Android emulation. I'm aware of that. I'm talking about iOS. Delta is such a beautiful, complete, well thought out piece of software. And it's been out on alt store side hacking, side loading before, and the Patreon. There are other ways you could get it on iOS, but now to go into Apple's own App Store, click get, have this free software run so incredibly well and be completely ad free and just be an incredible user experience for emulation on iOS. It feels like a major shift, even bigger than what Epic is trying to accomplish or what EU and antitrust regulations are trying to accomplish, just in terms of the floodgates being open for proof in the demand. And I don't know if it's because of Apple regulations before that made it too difficult for Nintendo to put the retro Switch Online free games on iOS devices as like a perk or something like that. But I mean, this Delta software, it runs so flawlessly. And when you play in portrait mode, it has, and you can change all this, you can customize all of this, but it has skins from the device you're playing. So it will show like the bottom, I'll show mine, but you can look it up. It like looks like a Game Boy, you know, it's there ready to go, ready to play. Then if you turn it horizontal, it gives you the screen, the buttons on screen. You can change the opacity and change that. You can also change what this wrapper looks like. You can do a whole bunch of different custom things. If you open up a NES game, it looks like a NES controller. Everything about it is top tier. The buttons with the touchscreen display or controls all have haptic feedback, so it feels really good to play. I'm not saying you'd want to play some hardcore action game with touchscreen controls. That's never the best way to play. But I was just showing Mario Golf, perfect way to play just on your phone with touchscreen controls. Pokemon, perfect to play slowly. It doesn't require, you know, precision. But you can also slap a backbone onto your phone or any controller, connect any controller, and Delta knows you have a controller connected, and now you're playing with a controller, and you can AirPlay your game screen to a big screen, to your Apple TV or whatever, and Delta knows that you've AirPlayed it, and it takes just the video of the game to your screen and then leaves your controller, if it's a DS game, as the second screen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is awesome. Or if it's not, it's just a nice little controller wrapper that you don't need to use if you're using a controller. And it all just works so dang well. Again, 5-6-year-old piece of software that had been out in other ways to get on iOS. But to have it now just be, excuse me, free software, it's incredible. And it has save states, rewind, fast forward. You can cheat codes that you can like load in or add. You can put it to do like a button hold. If something that like requires a fast tap, you don't want to do that, you can go in and do that. It also has quick resume. Like if you come back, I don't know if this is true for every game, but you'll come back even without creating a save state. It'll be like, do you want to pick up where you were? You were just playing, you know, Metroid Fusion or whatever. You want to pick up where you were? And it's like, wow. It feels like, you know, Xbox Series S, and you can also play multiplayer. It's just
how
incredible.
How are you getting games on there?
So that's a great question. People have asked me how I got a lot of my ROMs before, and I don't remember the little thing that I had because it was forever ago on like Windows 98 or whatever my dump is. But now there is a new one that I will share with people, GB Operator. So this is just for Game Boy and Game Boy Advanced, and it works with Mac, which I'm on a PC for this, but a lot of my day-to-day is Mac stuff. And the GB Operator it's a little box that you put your card in, and it flashes it to your computer. So you can either then play it on your computer right then, or you can create the ROM and create the actual backup so you're not putting your cart in and out and getting that wear and tear. You can also transfer your battery saves from your cart to the computer. And so I have my analog pocket behind me. I love my analog pocket. I think it is the best way to play Game Boy games, Game Boy Advance games, modern, best way to currently play them. But my God, this is convenient. I mean, it is just... instead of like now scrolling Reddit, I'm like, I can play a couple of holes of Mario Golf Advanced. Like there's no, I'm just needing my brain to be dumb for a little bit, you know, like this is what I'm going to do. And with the Backbone 1 version 2, it works with phones with, I have like just the thinnest Apple case on, but it works with your case on. So you don't even need to worry like, am I going to go caseless, pop my case off or not? You can just click it on and play. So I keep my Backbone 1 in my car if I have a hot second. And what this solves for me that I think a lot of mobile games don't necessarily solve is that quick resume and pause function. I've been playing a lot of Diablo Immortal on my phone. I'm late to that party, but I really like it. But it feels awkward then if it's like, oh, Ben's calling, or my mom's texting me, or now I need to go pick up my kids. And it's like, when was the last time this saved? You know, like, that feels a little nerve-wracking for me. And with these old games running through a Delta, I don't have to worry about that. Also, there are other ways to get ROMs that everybody is aware of. I'm a big fan of ripping your own carts, but I also realize you can't buy these games anymore from the developer.
Wait, so you rip your own carts and then what? What's step two?
So step two, the way my workflow is, I have them in a Dropbox. And then so from in Delta, excuse me, I can main menu in Delta. So there's a little plus button. You can access
your Dropbox?
In the top right corner. Well, that's you access really cool. your that's files on really your phone. Cool. So what I do is I go to my Dropbox, export to file on my device itself, my phone, and then load it that way. You can connect it to like a Google Drive, but I just do it locally because I showed my screen there. I have like six of my games on there because otherwise I'd have analysis paralysis of like, congratulations, here's all the GBA games you collected, jerk. Which one are you gonna play right now? So I'm trying to stay focused. But I am, again, I know Android's had emulators for a while, but I am blown away by how thoughtful and purpose-built Delta feels in any way you want to play it. And I think it just, as you mentioned, it's been the top free app for whatever it is, 2-3 weeks now. The demand for this style of gaming on mobile devices is through the roof. It's incredible.
That's, you gotta think a massive missed opportunity for Nintendo. You know, like the idea that there was this much pent up demand and they couldn't figure out a way in decades to make this a viable arm of their business. It's ridiculous. The idea that you know they're selling people virtual arcade subscriptions and you can't get this to be part of it somehow. There's got to be some meetings. Like, what guys? This is literally money on the table right here.
Maybe it was App Store review processes because, you know, xCloud, I think now it can be its own app, but for a while it had to be in GeForce. Now it's like you have to basically create the web app because Apple required a certification of every single game that would be out on the service. So maybe it was just this Herculean task in order to be able to do this for Nintendo on iOS. But now, yeah, I mean, I would, it's kind of like iTunes to Napster, right? Everybody was pirating all their music because getting it digitally reliably and affordably was difficult. And then iTunes was like, 99 cents, here you go. And I think if Nintendo was like Nintendo Online Plus expansion or whatever their more expensive one now comes with this mobile version of it.
Now the way to do it is sell,
gladly pay.
Give the emulator the official Nintendo app for free and sell the games a la carte in it. Like that's the way everybody wants it to be. Just well, let me of buy a the game I service, want.
Huh? Right, but the other one, the subscription service, keeps me hooked for longer.
I guess, but I feel like it's a harder sell for me to sign up to a new subscription service than it is for me to go, oh, I'll play Mario Golf. Yeah. Oh my gosh. $2.99 for Mario Golf? Yeah, sure. Awesome.
Yeah. Or whatever. I mean, you know? It's incredible. It's truly incredible. And the haptic feedback for the on-screen controls are some of the best on-screen controls. Wow. Again, these are simpler games, so it's not trying to be Call of Duty on my phone, which they've done a good job of, and people are really adept at that. I'm not.
You can tell you're not because you went like this.
That's how they do it. I've watched esports people. They have it down and they use all their fingers. You can't waste a finger to hold
not
the phone.
Like that. Let's just say it's not like that. Audio listeners, whatever you have in your head is accurate.
And accurately portrayed, nailed it. Thank you, Jeff, for chiming in. But it's the Delta app. It is free on iOS. There's no ads, no anything. It's incredible.
My understanding is it loves to fly and it shows.
And the other thing is the GB operator, which I have not personally tested, but the internet reviews are through the roof for it. And I had an old PC one that's essentially the same thing, which is a cart flash dumper. But this seems to work flawlessly with Mac OS and people seem to love it.
All right. Downloading right now, man. You got me.
Delta emulator. Yeah.
It's real good.
All right, let's talk about the game that's on my playlist and Christian's as well. A lot of people are playing it right now. This is an early access game, but it's the newest game from Moon Studios, a studio I know Christian and I are both huge fans of. I suspect, Ben, you have a similar affinity for their work. Ori, the two Ori games. This is the next big release from them. It is called No Rest for the Wicked. And this is a big departure. It is not a Metroidvania. It is not a 2D side-scrolling platforming. It's a completely new kind of new genre for them. And it very much, I think, easily described as Diablo meets Dark Souls. It's top-down, isometric, action RPG trappings, but very different from a Diablo in that you're not going to be fighting hordes of enemies at any given time, slicing your way through these massive fights. It's much more controlled, much more disciplined, potential to die at any moment, like a Souls game where that you're going to have to use blocks and parries. You're going to have to take on a small number of enemies, and you can find yourself wandering into areas where a single enemy will be the death of you real quick.
Stamina meter. You can't just spam attack.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest, impediment, I think, to someone jumping into this game and that's expecting it to play like Path of Exile or Diablo or any of the other games that look like this, is that I expect to be able to just spam my attacks and keep rocking and rolling. And at a certain point, not only because your character real quick, especially in early levels, real quick can't even attack, but also can't move out of the way, can't roll, can't, you're a sitting duck if you just go in swords blazing. Tell me what you think of No Rest for the Wicked, Christian.
It is early access. I think this is the version of early access that I think 1.0 of no. Oh, I got a code for this. I'm assuming
I did as well.
We got codes for this. You can purchase it via early access, but we were both provided codes. It feels like early access in the sense that a lot of the things that I think will become sticky aren't quite tuned just right yet.
Huh.
I think the stamina for early levels is a real impediment and not encouraging. And I think part of it is, as you mentioned, Jeff, getting your mindset over what this game is and what you expect it to be because of how you, the isometric view, but it also is an ARPG in terms of collecting loot, even though that loot is a little more randomized, but it does have those Diablo, Path of Exile trappings in it as well. And I talked about my experience late to the party with Diablo 4 and Diablo Immortal. Both of those games make you feel like Clark Kent ripping off your shirt, bullets bouncing off your chest, like I am a god, you know, I can do no wrong. And then you feel that powerful when you start, and then you walk over to the first chest and it's like, just kidding, now I'm a god. And you have this amazing weapon and you go and wreak havoc. And No Rest for the Wicked is like, you suck. You suck so bad. Oh, you turned the wrong way. You drowned. You're dead. You idiot. And that is often associated with that Souls type game. But I feel like this game doesn't do quite enough. It doesn't Fortnite me with bots to let me win my first match. It's trying to teach you all of its systems that I think are pretty
cool. I beat up on a lot of crabs right at the beginning.
yes, you do. You beat up on a lot of crabs.
Idiots on the pirate ship, they're fine to take out. Yeah.
And I think it's trying to kind of teach you these systems, but it does it, I think, while still punishing you. And for me, the stamina buildup felt slow going. The fall damage felt severe in a world where I felt like I was exploring and not platforming, but kind of platforming. And so I feel like there are some little tweaks. I'm not a developer, you know, change some numbers on the back end.
You're looking for more rest for the wicked. Is that your angle here?
A little bit of like no rest, you know, just right. Like
just a little rest,
like a nap for the wicked. How about that?
I just need a bench with a pad on it. That's all I need.
Okay, God, now you're speaking my language.
Rest for the wicked. It's beautiful, though. Holy crap.
It is beautiful. Yeah. My goodness, is it beautiful. I absolutely love how this game looks. And there's in the menu, it's like, DLSS is coming. I'm like, oh, I can't wait till DLSS comes.
But it's grayed out unless you have a PS5 Pro. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, smart. No, it is funny. Like, I booted up just a little bit before we started the show here. And I mean, the art style surprised me. I thought I was paying attention to this game when it would pop up in trailers and stuff, but even like when you're creating a character, like the default templates, like these lumpy weirdos are how the humans look in this game. It's really a bold style.
I love it. There's full-on cutscenes, you know, where you're like in the royal palace and everybody has this very strange elongated kind of almost claymation looking weirdness to them, and I am eating it up. I absolutely love the look of this game. It is so distinct, and it really has its own identity right away. But everything also, the lighting is awesome. The color palette is so interesting. I am so into this game. I love the isometric perspective. I'm just, you know, my favorite game of all time is Ultima 7. I there's something about isometric that feels fantasy to me and wonderful. And so I'm already into it. And I have not fallen in love with Souls games, Souls-like games in the past. And even this one, it is at a certain point, I'm like, I just got to log out. I just got to log out right now. I just can't play this for a while because there is a level of just getting beat down and like, you got to get better. You got to get better. You got to get better. I'm like,
you
got to
learn the animations. You got to
learn those animations.
You're going to see a lot of these mid-tier tough creatures, and if you don't take them seriously, they're going to wreck you every time. Yeah.
And then you walk and you just wander into a boss fight, which I did a number of times. And I'm like, oh, cool, a boss fight. Oh, that looks impossible. How did a guy with a reach that goes halfway across the screen, I can't even dodge out of the way. How am I ever going to know the universe where this is going to happen? But I feel like this is a game I could get really into. Mostly because the look and feel has me just loving to be in the world, but also, so you start the game in this ship, which is sort of this tutorial section, and it gives you a sword and shield very quickly. And it's like, okay, shield for blocking, parrying, sword for attacks, you know, go. And you're like, okay, slice, slice. Oh, you're out of stamina. Oh, really? That quickly? Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Oh my goodness. That's very fast. I can't even kill somebody without running out of stamina. That seems excessive. And so the very beginning of the game, I think, feels really harsh. It is an impediment. It was to me, I think. And I think it will be to many. But very quickly, I got like two daggers, double wielding daggers, which is much more of a, you know, agility weapon. And I'm like, slice, 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 slice. And I was like, well, now I'm having fun. Now I'm really enjoying the combat system because it really is a departure from that very heavy, you know, slow attack, waited out. I kind of like the ability of rushing in. And there's still like stealth attacks where you can run up behind people or sneak up behind people and attack them from behind. And I found myself relying on that a lot.
Suplexing from behind. Yeah.
Yeah. and I do think that, like you said, Christian, very early access, very much this is going to be tuned. There's a lot of kinks that are going to be worked out over time. It's going to feel a lot better, but already like the crafting system is cool. You know, that layer of Diablo doesn't really have that. I mean, you're crafting certain things in Diablo, but like the way you're making food items and you're constantly like looking for resources that'll actually benefit you moment to moment, I found to be compelling. And the one thing that it borrows from Dark Souls that I don't think people talk about enough when they talk about quote unquote Souls-likes. Souls-like almost always just means the combat system. But I think even though I've never truly fallen in love with a Souls game, when I have found the fun in Souls-likes, the thing that has really hooked me is the layer of true discovery that those games have. That every nook and cranny has some unexpected little thing hidden there. Oh, there's a chest. How do I get to that? Oh, there's an item. I could see the little glowy item somewhere. How the heck am I going to get there? Oh, you know, I turned a corner and oh my goodness, behind this wall, there's a bad, super bad guy, but it revealed an item that I don't have any idea what that does. No Rest for the Wicked does that. Takes that from Souls-likes. And I absolutely love that in an isometric perspective. Like the doing the discovery stuff, the real true exploration where I'm, you know, shimmying along a beam that just looked like decoration, but I found my way atop it and I shimmy, 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 and it gets me to another area where, oh my gosh, there was a chest hidden there that has a really cool thing in it. That stuff is great. And I love it in this kind of isometric ARPG perspective. So I really have a lot of positive takeaways from No Rest for the Wicked, even if I recognize it's going to get better. It's just not, it's not reached its full potential yet, which is sort of the point. Like, they're not claiming it has, right? They've put this game out very early. A lot of people are getting frame rate issues and stuff. It's just like, this is not a finished game. So I don't know if I would recommend people rushing out and buying it now, expecting a finished game. But I do think investing in this game now is something that's going to pay off down the line. And I think this is going to be a very, very good game when it's finally 1.0.
Yeah, it's on GeForce Now. Also, I would like to point out for folks who may be like, oh, it seems like it's pretty demanding. Like, it is a, its listed specs are fairly demanding. I had a really good experience with it on GeForce Now. I'm still a big fan of cloud gaming, so I fired it up on that. Played some natively, played some on GeForce Now, and it ran really well. And I love that implementation because that also lets me play it on the go, which is a great way to play this game.
I heard that they're targeting it to work great on Steam Deck, but I haven't tried it personally. Have you?
It's not great. Yeah. Well, I hadn't played it today, but whenever it was 2 days ago and I tried it on Steam Deck, it was like the low graph. There's early levels. There's a lot of rain and screen effects. And to hit the lower resolution for me to get a stable 30, that stuff kind of just looked like Vaseline. So I ended up just playing on GeForce Now on my Steam Deck.
It's great. They need to have like different, I don't know, different colors or something for Steam reviews. Cause you know, the game came out and I checked it out and I saw like, Steam, it's in like mixed reviews.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it's like, oh, I guess it's not that great of a design game so far. I don't know if it's worth jumping into. And then you find out it's a lot of people mainly just talking about, you know, like, my computer can't handle this. It's like, I need some asterisk, just something in there. Cause it seems like, am I reviewing this game on Steam negatively for design reasons or tech reasons? There needs to be some distinction there.
It is unfortunate, especially a game that is early access. Like, people, I think, have unrealistic expectations, or maybe the communication from from the developer is really the problem. I don't know. But either one of those, it's unfortunate this game is sitting at mixed because they're not claiming it's finished. And a lot of the, if you go through there, a lot of the complaints are like, this is an unfinished game. This is not enough settings. I can't change the settings. And we put the game out those things in yet. You know, I think that's, it's tricky. It's a tricky situation, but I do think we are past the point of, you only get one chance to make a first impression. I think we've seen enough evidence that these type of things, once they get fixed and the game can have like a re coming out party, I think people are going to discover this game and really fall in love with it. It's got so much going for it. And I've never been a huge fan of this type of combat, but I was having a blast with this game. I really was. And I think I'm going to set it aside for a while and come back to it, you know, at a later date. But I am super jazzed about what they're making there. I think it's really cool.
And what a fascinating pivot, you know. I don't even know if like the marketing would be helpful. It's like, from the people who brought you Ori, Will of the. It's like Ori is so fast, and I mean they're both beautiful, but very different graphic styles. And you know, this is not Ori. It's not like, if you loved Ori, you got to try No Rest for the Wicked. Like, no.
Yeah, completely different games. Although I think you just pointed this out, but I'll underline it. They have phenomenal visual artists at that company. I mean, these games are beautiful. I love the look of it. There's so many really wonderful sort of animation things that just make you go, yes. Ooh, that feels good. Ooh, I already like how that feels. You know, it's cool. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I got a big thumbs up for where it already is on No Rest for the Wicked. I'll just mention one other quick thing before we wrap up. I won't do a full VR segment this week, but I will say, like, evidently tens of thousands of people, the Fallout TV series has made me hankering to play Fallout again. And so I reinstalled Fallout 4 VR, because why not play the VR version? And I took great advice from a wonderful YouTuber named Beardo Benjo, who does great VR content on YouTube. And he outlined a whole raft of mods that are available for Fallout 4 VR now that you can download with Wabbajack or Vortex or a bunch of really cool, you know, streamlined mod installers. And you can make Fallout 4 VR look so good now. Admittedly, when it was released, it looked like a little bit of a butt, mostly like a butt. Now, boy, the modders have gone and really turned it into a game that looks like it was designed for VR. It looks spectacular. There's a lot of really wonderful gameplay tweaks and UI tweaks that people have added. And you can find these mod lists. The one I'm using is the Mad God Classic. Mad God had a whole mod list that Beardo Benjo used, and then the YouTuber criticized it. And so this guy revamped it and did this classic mode. And I'm really enjoying it. It looks so good. And it's Fallout, man. And it makes me feel like, I loved watching this show so much. I want to be back in this world. Now I'm back in this world. Got my dog meat by my side and my Pip Boy on my hand. And I'm moving through the wasteland in VR, just kind of re-enjoying being in that world. So anybody that has that sitting on their hard drive or in their uninstalled Steam list, know that you can very quickly and very easily improve how that game looks and plays with these mods. And I would say it's very, very much worth revisiting at this point.
That's awesome.
Is it Vault Tech mods? Like, what type of, I don't know if I trust these mods, Jeff. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, no, it's, it feels like a completely different game. It's really, well, these people do amazing stuff. And I know that non VR version of Fallout 4 has incredible mod support too. You know, people have completely improved on that game too.
Yeah. So they make the best Nintendo console I've ever had on my phone. Yeah. It's incredible.
Right. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Stick around because we do have some parting gifts for you coming right up. But Ben Hansen, man, it's always so much fun to hang out with you. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. After listening for so many years, it's always a thrill to be on the show. So I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the awesome stuff that you do online.
Yeah, the main thing is the MinMax Show. It's our flagship podcast. So if you're listening to this, you can check that out. It's on your favorite podcast app. It's not a Patreon exclusive thing or anything. It's also on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/MinMax. And there are two N's in MinMax, just like Kanata, in honor of Minneapolis, though. I don't know if your two N's are in honor of Minnesota or Minneapolis. I assume not.
Yes, it is, because I'm such a huge Prince fan. I just wanted it to be that way.
There it goes. Have you ever gone to Paisley Park, by the way?
No, I've always wanted to make the trek and I've never been.
Yeah, I went, I think it was last summer. Hey, you know what? It'll be worth your while. It's a fun, weird thing to experience. You know,
I know they've turned it into much more of a place to visit now that he's passed. It's much more like a museum almost, right?
Yep, and you go on a little tour. They had a whole room where they said, like, oh, this is where Prince used to have all of his arcade cabinets. And then they're like, and moving on. And I was the only one that raised my hand. I was like, do you know what arcade games he had? They're like, no, we don't know. They're in the garage somewhere. I'm like, God, I want to know what arcade games he had sitting in his house.
Oh, man, that'd be so awesome.
Modded port of Moonwalker, which was just
just modded for him.
Yeah. Prince Walker.
Yeah. It's modded just to say Moonwalker sucks. I read a really funny anecdote that I'd never seen before. I'm going to share with you guys real quick. evidently, one of the Bourne movies, Prince was a huge fan of. And so he went to the premiere of one of the Bourne movies, and then he invited the whole cast to a performance of his, and they all went, and then they went backstage afterwards and he hung out with them. And evidently Matt Damon was like, hey, I heard you live in Minnesota. Do you live in Minnesota? And Prince goes, I live in my own heart, Matt Damon.
We got to steal that one.
So that's good.
That's so perfect.
Good. Anyway, that's why I love Prince. Anyway, you were saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The MinMax Show. Yeah. It lives in your hearts, hopefully. So you can check out that podcast. And then we have, the Deepest Dive on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You can check that out for free on our YouTube channel or unlock the podcast version over there on Patreon. And we just have, this is going up Monday, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. We have an interview that just went up on MinMax's YouTube channel and the Patreon podcast feed. But it's a fun one where I've always loved doing these developer on developer discussions, just line up two developers who have some overlap. And so the one that just went live is with the localization director for Final Fantasy 16, and then the writer and director for Hi-Fi Rush, John Johannes.
Wow, cool.
And so those two talking about creating Western-focused games made in Japan and what that was like for the two of them. And they had never met before. And so it's a lot of stories. They're big fans of each other's games. And I've been trying to line that one up for months and we finally did it. And it was a really fun conversation because you don't get to hear developers of Final Fantasy games be that loose and casual that often. So it was a very fun chat that's on MinMax's YouTube channel. If you want to check
that out. Love it. What a cool thing. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I had my newsletter, my latest installment of my newsletter, which you can find at christianspicer.substack.com, went out on Friday. And it's conversational, casual conversations about video games. And this one was about esports. Esports were the thing. I was talking to a friend today, and it was like esports were NFTs before NFTs were the next thing. It was like esports were the thing. And they're not. They're not. They might be again, but they're not. And this newsletter is kind of breaking down, and I link to a lot of the stuff, but how much money was spent on it, what happened to that money, and why I think esports aren't the thing, nor will they be without major reworking. And so folks can find that at christianspicer.substack.com. And folks can find stuff from this show on Threads and Instagram at DLC Hype Train. And they can watch video versions of our beautiful faces, segments from this show on YouTube at DLC Pod.
You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I have a bunch of other shows for you to check out, including the Filmcast, talking about movies and TV shows. We got our annual summer movie wager coming up in just a couple of weeks. So that's going to be a big one. Stay tuned for that. Also, I do We Have Concerns, the comedy science show with Anthony Carboni. You can check that out at wehaveconcerns.com. A sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. They just did the race at Talladega. It was a fan controlled car at Talladega. Spoiler alert, came in 11th, which is not too shabby. Completely controlled by fans. Really, really cool stuff. You can hear us talk about that, The Fan Controlled Show. And also the book club. Don't forget to check out the book club. Lana Bashinsky and I are talking about the Melazin Books of the Fallen. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Ben, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, I'm kind of, it's kind of repeating some stuff from last week for you, but Game Informer magazine, everybody. I worked there for 9 years. I know Marcus Stewart was just on talking about it, but
yeah,
I'm super excited for that team that they now have those standalone subscriptions where you can go to subscription.gameinformer.com and get a subscription that's not tied to the GameStop power-up rewards nonsense, all of that. But I love Game Informer. I'm scared to death about Game Informer. I feel like we'd all be very sad if that magazine went away forever. And I feel like this is your last chance, everybody, to prove to GameStop that magazine is worth hanging on to and supporting and funding, because their numbers are dropping over there on the Game Informer side. And so please show GameStop that magazines are cool. Video game magazines are worth keeping around in the year 2024. By going to subscription.gameinformer.com. And you know, like I got one for myself, and then this is too dorky, but I was like, oh, you know what? For my nephew's birthday, I'm gonna get him a subscription to a video game magazine. Like he's never had
that. That's rad.
And just think, I mean, it's so easy to do now. I'm not paid to do this, to be clear, but it's $19.91. $19, everybody. Yeah, effectively $20, but what are you gonna do? For a year of Game Informer magazines, and you can just for $20, send some kid in your life video game magazines for a year. That's the biggest slam dunk in the world. And you can show GameStop that they're making a mistake by not funding Game Informer more. So check out that site and
great gift idea. That's a great gift idea. Very cool. Christian Spicer, I know you're a subscriber.
I am. I did the 2 years for whatever it was, 36. I had been subscribing through the hell that is the Power Up Rewards program for years before. And I'm so glad that it's unlocked from that now. Also, pro tip to piggyback on Ben's here is that when you subscribe, you can kind of put your name as whatever you want. Mm. So all of my magazines that I get, I think I currently get 4 or maybe 5 physical magazines. They're all addressed to Positive Affirmations. And it feels so good to go to the mail and get a magazine that you're excited about, and you open it and it says like, you're worth it. And I'm like, I am.
You're pooping the right amount.
Your bowel movements are regular. And it's like, thank you. Anyway, just a fun little tip to brighten up your mailbox. I'm going to stay on the Apple TV Plus train. I have not finished this show, so it feels weird to recommend it. I've watched the first two episodes of Sugar on Apple TV Plus. And this is a throwback to the pulp noir detective shows of yore, the hard-boiled, the things I loved about Alan Wake 2, the detective who puts on his hat just to put on his hat. You know, the grumbly voice because it's a grumbly voice. And this show straight up cuts to, it takes place in modern day Los Angeles, but it also straight up cuts to vintage shots of LA. Like they're driving through the city and instead of doing like an aerial, it just cuts to 1952 Los Angeles for a little bit and then cuts back to present day. And it's not saying anything. I think it's just really tying the connection to that type of pulp drama or noir that came before it. And I think it's really cool. I love this type of story, and I don't think we get enough of them that are thick with the whodunit, drinking the coffee, sitting there talking over your own narration. I really love that stuff. And so I think it's fun to see a modern take on it. Watch the first two episodes, really enjoyed them. Have no clue where it goes after that, but it's called Sugar on Apple TV Plus.
Right on. I'm also going to recommend a new TV series. This one much lighter. This is on Max, the one to watch for HBO. It is Conan O'Brien Must Go. Holy moly, have I been laughing my patoot off at this show? It's a travel show where Conan O'Brien goes to a country that he has not visited, or maybe he has, but. He's going, it's not in the United States. It's a foreign country, foreign to him. And he basically, does crowd work and bits. He meets up with people, does things, does activities. And he just sort of is so funny on his feet that they make something out of nothing. I have no idea how many tens of hours they shoot for 1 5-minute bit, but whatever it is, it's worth it. Cause I have thoroughly enjoyed the first four episodes. I don't know if there's more coming, but each episode is a different country and there are multiple things happen in each episode, multiple places in the country, multiple people he's interacting with. Just very funny. I'm a huge Conan O'Brien fan. It's great.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I've only watched the first two episodes, but they have had me rolling. Like,
it's so good.
There's almost flavors of like a Nathan For You, like just having him interact with these everyday people like that cowboy in Argentina that was just having none of it. And he just, if he sees somebody who's just not cracking in any way and he just focuses on them, just having this weird collision of cultures is so fun to watch.
It is very good. He is so funny and so willing to do whatever it takes to get the joke, you know, just like completely make a fool of himself or, you know, hurt himself, whatever it's going to be. It's very, very funny. So I'm really digging the show. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Andrew, who says, "Hey team, long time no see. Hope all is well in Colorado and Los Angeles. We just got back from Palm Springs and it was delightful. Love your area out west. I'm writing today to recommend Sum 41's new album, Heaven X Hell, or Heaven Cross Hell. I don't know. Heaven.
It's a double album, so it's one and both. You know, you get them. You get
well,
them
the Godzilla X Kong, you're not supposed to pronounce the X, so I don't even know what to do with those anymore. So what? Video games, you say cross. I don't know. I don't even know. It's Heaven X Hell. Anyway, it's their final album, and it's honestly some of the best we've heard from them. The Heaven album is a pop-punk swan song, and Hell is a tribute to some of their best metal work. Pain for Pleasure, anyone? They are on their final tour this summer, and this album signals it is sure to be a good one. Stay warm this spring, Andrew." Christian, I assume you have things to say about this?
I think it has some of their best songs and some that are a little bit of filler, which I throw back to their other album, All Killer, No Filler, which is just a tight album. But I love Sum 41 coming together for a swan song, and I love that they brought back both of their eras. It'd be like if Moon Studios' next game was a ARPG Souls-like platformer.
Right.
We will combine all of our genres, and it's really cool that they did it. So it's fun to see them back out there rocking again.
Ori X Rest.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you, Andrew, for that awesome parting gift. If you'd like to have your parting gift on our show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Thanks to our theme song composers, White Q, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get merchandise for the show by going to store.dlcpod.com. And, of course, our biggest thanks go to our patrons who make this show possible, without whom we would not be here. So thank you, patrons, for supporting us. Our top-tier patrons, our Hype Train patrons, they become video games. We got to tell you about these games, these Hype Train games that have not gotten enough hype lately. That's why they're on the Hype Train for us, because we got to give them hype. I'm talking about, well, Christian, of course you know. I used the old card already. The old card already. And we talked about old Atari games. You know about Q-Bert. But do you remember Talbert? Jonathan Talbert, an incredible game from the old days.
The thing that about Talbert that I thought was revolutionary at the time, and I think still stands the test of time, is how it did the thing that so many games are trying to do now with old IP, is that Jonathan Talbert came out being a totally different genre than Q-Bert.
Yeah.
But told the origin story of how this little orange alien got stuck on this little pyramid grid that it had to climb up by being Jonathan and figuring out their way to become Q. I was blown. I think more old games need to do that. They need to change genres. Totally.
How did Pac-Man pack, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, what rises before it revenges? I don't know, but I want to know.
Well, the thing that everybody remembers about Q-Bert, right, is that he was a little weirdo, and when he got upset, he would go, and he would have these weird symbols. But what Talbert, when you have to Talbert what you want him to know, and it became more of a Eliza-style talking sim, you know? More of a text adventure, so to speak, you know? When you tell Bert how to become Q-Bert, it was fascinating. That's all I'm saying. It was an amazing experience playing Jonathan Talbert.
I think that's a towel connection to bring Talbert to Talbert, but I wasn't naming games back in the 1900s, as
either
my kids
way,
call it.
A game that needs much more, because how many text adventures were you just typing, you know, the number sign, a tilde, an exclamation point, you know?
I remember my parents walked in on me typing those, and they were like, "We don't allow that language in this house, young man." Like, we know what those signs mean.
You know what? Go yourself, mom.
And do you know what she Talbert me to do after that? She Talbert me to out the front door.
Yeah.
That's what she told me to do. Yeah. Yeah.
The other game I wanted to talk about is Victor Valenzuela. Do you remember that game? The double V, we used to call it.
That's what you called it, was double V?
Sometimes, you know.
Uh-huh.
Instead of Victor Valenzuela. Victor Valenzuela is a mouthful, you know, when you're on the playground and you're talking kids. Did you play double V this weekend? Yeah, heck yeah, I played double V.
That explains so much, because I remember my best friend's cousin's dad worked for Double V Studios, he said.
Oh,
and
yeah?
He knew, like, the cheat code. And I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, what is double V? But apparently I was just the loser kid who didn't know the shorthand for Victor Valenzuela, that it was double V or V squared, I think, sometimes too.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
This was an incredible racing game. It was sort of My brain's not working. What is the racing game where you're not in a car, you're in like a hover thing? What was that called? You love that game. You love this series.
Wipeout?
Wipeout. It was like Wipeout, double V. And you played the race driver, Victor Valenzuela. And he raced rockets. Remember that game? It was so fun. Double V.
And the best part about it is that actually, I don't know if you ever did this, Jeff, but because my best friend's cousin's dad did work for Double V Studios, there actually is a cheat code. And if you zoom all the way out, it's mind blowing. I don't know if you know this, but when you zoom all the way out, you're actually not a race car. You're the lead goose.
In the V?
In the V, soaring over the tracks. And it was like, what?
Double V, man.
This game can do that?
You're either victor or you loser. That's what they would say in that racing game. You're either Victor Valenzuela or you might as well be last, you know?
You're a loser, not a swella.
Oh, such wonderful walks down memory lane, these games. Thank you, Hype Train patrons, for allowing us to reminisce about games of old by supporting us at such a high level. We are in your debt and grateful. If you'd like to be a Hype Train patron and get your name emblazoned in the annals of video game history, go to patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.